tried it with just the desk, and it really isn't the same. Larry Sanders!
Hi, this is Gary Shandling, and this is not a soundstage. We are sitting in my den at home. I'm here with Mr. Tom Shales, who's a television critic for The Washington Post, Pulitzer Prize-winning television critic. Tom, nice to see you. Thanks for coming over.
Thank you, Gary. I feel like I might be compromising my integrity as a critic, though, by doing this. Maybe I should hate your next show or movie, whatever it is, just to prove that I haven't been bought. Well, let's go back to the very beginning. Indeed, before the beginning.
Right.
When did the idea first pop into your head that you were, instead of doing a talk show, like everybody else in show business, that you were going to do a show about a talk show?
I actually had a time in my life when I was very seriously considering taking one of the late spots, or the late spot after Dave Letterman. I was sitting at a restaurant, and I knew that in Brentwood, I knew that day I had to finally make a decision on whether I was going to accept the late night spot after Dave. And I had had the idea for Larry Sanders years before that, and I thought, okay, do I want to do a talk show or do a show about a talk show? And, you know, it was a fantastic offer from CBS, and I was really tormented that day. And at the end of the day, I decided I wanted to do a show about a talk show, because I thought, you know, it would be more challenging, that I could stretch more as an actor and as a writer. And I just really also didn't think that on a daily basis I could hold up doing a talk show. I think that's a hard job, going on television every night. I always say one of the oddest things in the world is to be on TV every night. The only thing that's odder is wanting to be on TV every night.
You actually had guest hosted as far back as when Johnny Carson was on, right?
Right. I guest hosted The Tonight Show starting in 83.
Many times.
Yeah, many times. And so I had, you know, I had a lot of experience to bring to Larry Sanders. A lot of really funny, you know, experiences with Fred DeCordova and who was the producer of The Tonight Show, and Artie's patterned after him. And I think Larry's patterned after a combination of Johnny and Dave and Jay and me and Sally Jesse Raphael.
Hmm.
Yeah. And not in that order. He's mostly Sally Jesse Raphael.
I'm just curious, the protocol then, after you've guessed, if you did Johnny's show, would Johnny call you up and then say, the next day, and say, well, nice going, Gary?
You know, I did get one call from Johnny after I hosted for a week, and he said, I heard you did very well, and or I saw it and you were very funny, and I was really shocked by that call. You know, he's a great man, really great man.
If you'd had your talk show, wouldn't it have been a lot like Larry's talk show?
I think it would have been different. I think Larry is more generic than I would be, and that's appropriate for the series, that it's a generic talk show. And I think I would do an edgier show than Larry. I think Larry was really more pandering to his audience and concerned with ratings and adjusting what he was like and always trying to be beaming on stage. And I think a talk show I would do would be more conversational.
Would you have done a Tarzan sketch? And if so, would you have made sure that your testicles were covered by your costume?
I would do a talk show with no desk and no pants and my testicles constantly showing, because, you know, I'm always ahead of the curve.
So once you had the idea and you turned down the executives at NBC and CBS, how long did it take to get the Larry Sanders Show going?
I think it was about 2 years later, because Michael Fuchs, who was at HBO at the time, wanted to do a show about a guy who hosts a talk show, so it was just a perfect match. I talked to him and fortunately got an order for 13, which means I didn't have to do a pilot and then submit it and wait and see. So the fact is that the first show that we shot, in which Larry was upset that Hank was doing so much outside work, and at one point Hank fell asleep on the couch, and Larry was mad, and Hank insisted that he was half of the show. And we shot this show as the first one, and it's good, but the tone was a little heavy, I thought, but good. And I looked at it and showed it to friends, and then we shot another one that was with Mimi Rogers, where she flirted with Larry in the makeup room, which was all good. And then Peter Tolan and I wrote a script about Larry not wanting to do live commercials, and it was for the Garden Weasel, and that ultimately became what aired first. So we had the advantage of looking at an episode and already seeing kind of what was wrong and what could be fixed, and had two or three more shots at it before one of them aired.
Mm-hmm. Then did you do post-production, re-editing, tinkering on the episodes, unlike, for instance, the one that was supposed to be the pilot? Or did it just air as it was?
No, then the one that was supposed to be the pilot, we went back in and cut out. There were a lot of panning documentary kinds of shots that sort of take your mind off the comedy. It became a little heavy-handed. So we took just a lot of those moves out and tightened it up as much as we could, and it aired as the last episode of the first season. And by then the show had been established, so this one totally worked in context of the others and seemed to have a sort of dramatic feel to it.
Now, the talk show was shot on tape. The show, the backstage was shot on film, right?
Yeah.
And sometimes you'd even intercut, like we'd be seeing the talk show, and you'd be talking to the camera, but then we'd cut to Rip Torn's point of view, Artie, and he'd be on film looking at it on a monitor, and this was all very clever, and
it was extraordinarily ambitious.
It was a lot of trouble to go to.
Why
was it worth it, I guess, is what I'm...
Well, first of all, it was extraordinarily ambitious technically, because we would have four video cameras and three film cameras, and seven cameras all set up at the same time, the film cameras were constantly moving, and it was very, very difficult. And the first season, we would be shooting a show on the talk show. I remember shooting the video, and we had a live audience, and then we had to shoot film scenes within it. It took us like 6 hours, and it was horrible. To this day, I remember, and said, well, we can't do this again. We can't make people wait around. So we started to do the talk show without a live audience, and use canned laughter and just do the video part and then do the film part on another day. It was very complicated scheduling all of this. If we had a live audience and we were doing the film cameras like during the commercial break, they would just run in. A lot of handheld and a lot of... this is, by the way, the hand signal I use for handheld all through my dating life. And I'd say we're going to do most of this, you know, handheld. I use a lot of the same vernacular in my dating life as the television show. So the film cameras would run in and always shoot also at a different angle, so that you could subtly feel, if you didn't know one was film and one was video, you could subtly feel that something was different and like you were looking in, and that was the documentary style. You could never shoot the film camera straight on if you were doing the video. It's very complicated and very clear. I was hardly ever confused.
How did you get a studio audience to show up to tape just like 18 minutes of a Larry Sanders talk show?
Until we built a fan base, we had to have what in L.A. is called an audience service that brings in busloads of people from different places. I'm not sure where they come in from.
But you can just dial up an audience if you...
You can dial up an audience, and then you can dial up, it's like an auto rental company. You can dial up a damaged audience for a little less money, one that's, you know, rolled a few times on the freeway. And we had a lot of those to begin with, and... coincidentally, one of my best friends was the fellow who did the audience warm-up, and he had a hard time of it. He had to explain to the audience that they were seeing a talk show part that was then going to be cut into a story, and then I would talk to the audience and explain it to them. And one of the most fascinating things was, is the audience completely bought the talk show as a real talk show and reacted just as they would if they were at The Tonight Show. And I remember Jeffrey Tambor, when we first did our talk show, we had a moment on the stage in front of the audience where he leaned over to me and he said, "Don't we need to explain to them what the story is so they know why I'm doing this or that?" And I said, "No, they'll totally react." He said, "Well, how will they know?" I said, "Well, how do they know what Johnny or Jay or Dave went through that day? They are trained to react and they'll buy whatever you do." And he couldn't believe it. I forget what the exact thing was, but he did it, and then he looked over at me, and the audience laughed, and he was shocked, because there is a certain communication now that talk shows and their audiences know what to do. Audiences know what to do, what their job is. It's almost as if they're on camera now, I think, you know, and they hoot at the right place and laugh at the right place.
The critics embraced you, didn't they, from the very beginning?
Yeah, they did. Thank goodness, because we didn't have a big audience. So it's not like I would walk out on the street and people would go, "Oh, my God, I love your show." So, you know, I would read most of the reviews because they were good, and I felt it was the only feedback we had, in a way.
The casting of the show was part of its, for lack of a better word, brilliance. Jeffrey Tambor, where had you seen him? What made him stand out in your head when you thought of a sidekick?
My friend Alan Zweibel, who wrote my first show with me, said, you know, an actor named Jeffrey Tambor read for me for something like a couple weeks ago, and he's hysterical. I didn't know much of Jeffrey's other work, because he's done other great work, and he was available and interested and came in and read a scene that we videotaped. And it was exactly Hank and what he's like on the show right from the get-go. And he was so inventive in the audition. Larry wanted to get out of the room and get away from him. And Jeffrey, that wasn't in the script, picked up a chair and put it in front of the door so Larry couldn't leave. And so Larry was really trapped. And he was just brilliant. And was unpredictable and caught me off guard, which is the kind of spontaneity I need to do my best work.
Where are your pants?
I flushed them down the toilet with the rest of tonight's show. Who'd you get to replace Roseanne? Did you get anybody?
Oh, yes, indeed. Mr. Richard Simmons.
The Rip Torn one is interesting. You want to hear the Rip Torn story? Have I ever told you the Rip Torn story?
Please, I entreat you. I implore you, Mr. Schandling. Tell me the Rip Torn story. Rip Torn done much comedy before?
No, he came in for a meeting and wouldn't read and came in with his agent and sort of sat like this. And, you know, 3 weeks later, I didn't know what to do, because I know he's brilliant, but just didn't know how it would feel to work with him, or if he could just, I couldn't get a feel for him. So I called him up and said, "Would you come in and just meet with me?" And he said, "Sure." And he came in and met with me in my office. It was just him and me. And we sat like this, really. And he said, I like the script, and I'd like to do this. And I said, "Well, would you read it with me?" And no one else is here. And he said, "No, I just don't read. I just can't read. I don't want to audition, and I won't read." And I said, "Okay, you know, I respect that." And I said, "I'm really glad to sit and talk with you." And then he said, "Fuck it." And he picked up the script, and we read a scene, and I'll just never forget going home, being blown away, going, "This guy is unbelievable." And I asked him, I said, "Have you done any series before? I mean, can your process work on a weekly basis?" And he said, "Yeah, I've done series television. I've done Rawhide." That's what he said. And I said, "That's good enough for me." And we hired him, and I swear to you, out of the blue, which is what his strength was, as a non sequitur, 6 episodes later, which is like 7 months, 8 months later, we finished a scene, and he turned to me, and he said, "I only did one Rawhide." Have you heard that story?
No.
The really tough part was casting Larry, because everybody was against me playing, including, you know, me.
Was there worry about Larry not being likable enough? I mean, Larry was... Larry is just an absolute palette of insecurities and paranoia, meaningless worries, some meaningful worries.
As opposed to what, other human beings who don't have those?
They're
usually not portrayed. What HBO really wanted to do is why, and this is why it was a perfect fit, is do a show that was edgy in a way that depicted human beings with foibles. And so there was never any concern about any of the characters being slanted in any way.
Mm-hmm.
And my interest as a writer is to depict people who have problems, because I think that's the truth of the human condition. I think once you're on this planet, you're in for a ride. And Larry denied those problems when he was on camera, and tried to deal with them as best he could when he was off camera, hence the style of the show.
But his use of Artie, his, hiding behind him, sending him out to do things he was afraid to do himself.
I think Larry is doesn't like confrontation. I think that there's certainly a part of me that's like that. I think there's a part of everybody like that that doesn't really want to stand up and say no.
Mm.
And so in show business, you can certainly hire somebody who can say no for you. And there's a great first season show in which they ask Larry to do live commercials. And Larry's sitting in the meeting room with Artie next to him, and he starts to say, I think, to the woman who's the one of the heads of the network, Larry says, well, you know, I don't really want to do live commercials because, Artie? And he just picks up, and I think that that's a, it just was, you know, and that continued throughout the years of the show.
Did Artie love Larry? Hate Larry? Larry was just a part of his world that he dealt with.
We used to talk about this on the show. The actors talked about it, and then we'd talk about it in the writers' room. But I think no, all the actors would agree with me. That show is based at its core on the fact that those people love each other. And Artie loves Larry, and Larry loves Artie, and Larry loves Hank, and it is trying to deal with that love in this materialistic world, and our self-centeredness, jealousies, everything, that is what the conflict of the show is.
Mm-hmm.
You have a man out there, meaning Larry, who's... wants the attention, wants the cameras on him, and is clearly self-centered, and yet loves these people, doesn't know how to express it.
So in all the ways that you were on an orthodox show, and a groundbreaking show, and a break-with-tradition type show,
mm-hmm.
when you get right down to it, you were a kind of a family domestic sitcom.
Yeah, I think that's really well... put. I really believe that the show would not work if that wasn't true. You know, I've heard people describe it as a cynical show about unlikable people and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. But I know for a fact that without that kernel of truth that you're talking about, it would not function. You can't watch it. You can't watch it as a human being.
Did stars ever balk, though, at coming on and sort of making fun of themselves? Some of them seem to really get with it and just relish the whole idea.
What you find is that... almost all the people we asked to do the show have that particular sense of humor and enjoy it and are willing to sort of be a little off color and do something they haven't done.
David Duchovny not only was comfortable with the plot line where he sort of develops a crush on Larry, but he sort of helped think it up, or he contributed to that.
I think it was purely his idea. We were playing basketball one day, and he said, I want to come on the show and have a crush on you. Well, change the tenor of the game. And, you know, I'm usually the first to sort of get everything, but I said, well, you mean yourself? You'll come on and yourself and have, because, you know, I mean, he's straight. Just, you know, period. So I said, so what do you mean? So he said, no, I want to have a crush on you, but I'm straight, and I just don't understand it. And I said, well, you know, if you will do it, it sounds hysterical.
One sort of risky step you took among millions, I guess, or hundreds, was to have Larry married that first season.
I think by the end of the series, we always laughed about it because we lost track of his history, whether he was married three or four times. But he was married, and by the end of the first season, had problems in his marriage, and then went through a dating phase, and then got married again and divorced, and through the crises. And I always thought that it was great because Larry was always dealing with crises in his life, and I thought that was important.
Why did you invite Roseanne on the show, and was she as much trouble as she's supposed to be on a set?
She was so seriously, unbelievably great on the show, and put in long, long hours, and she was perfect and hilarious. It's a really funny episode, and we had written this episode, and in fact had gotten to a point where we were ready to shoot it and hadn't cast who the person was that Larry was going to fall in love with. And we looked around on that lot, that CBS Radford lot, and thought who would be right, because it's a last minute thing and it's easy for someone to come over. And Roseanne was also on another, her offices were next to ours. And I called her and asked her, and she said, sure. And I remember specifically the amount of time she put in, and she was great.
I was talking once to no less an eminence than Johnny Carson about your show, and he said he loved it, he loves you, but he said, gee, you know, his experience, it wasn't that mean, people weren't that mean backstage, but you weren't really doing a show about show business, were you? You were doing a show about people.
Yeah, and I think specifically we weren't doing The Tonight Show. It was a fictional show, The Larry Sanders Show, and it might have had more angst than The Tonight Show had. But I think it's really a show about people struggling. Yeah.
Easy now. All right, so...
You suck!
One of my favorite episodes is the one where Hank guest hosts the show.
There were other guest hosts, weren't there, for the show, and Larry would see them at home, and once he called, he cut a vacation very short, as I recall, because somebody was just doing great, you know, slaying them as guest hosts. Who was that?
Yeah, it was Dana Carvey.
Dana Carvey.
Yeah.
That was a very funny show.
It was a good one. That's in the first season. Then we did another episode with Dana. He had done, this is a separate subject, but Dana had done a funny impression of me on Saturday Night Live, and he bumped into me some weeks after that, and he said, hey, I hope that impression didn't bother you in any way. And I said, no, but you should come on Larry Sanders and we have this discussion. You do an impression of Larry and then bump into Larry and go, did that bother you? And it would bother Larry. And it probably did bother me. Because it was like this nasal, whiny guy with big hair. And, you know, I don't see myself quite that way. That's exactly how I see myself. I just don't need to be reminded.
Well, I was on one of the shows. Everybody was so nice to me, and you sent flowers to my dressing room.
And what was I like?
You were charming. Yeah. Except once, at one point I said to you, we were waiting to do a retake because you had screwed up. And I couldn't think of anything else to say, so I said, nice suit. And you said, this is Larry's suit. And sort of snapped at me.
Yeah.
I guess I'd broken through the fourth wall or the fifth wall or the sixth wall.
Well, you had stumbled into the dressing room.
Oh, that's it.
Yeah. You know, I was startled.
What about shooting the last show? That's always an emotional experience. I suppose even on a flop show, it's an emotional experience. particularly. But you were not in that situation. But what was it like? You, the show itself was almost an hour long, as I recall, and it was a great show. Did you all get sloppily sentimental as things were fading down?
Well, sloppily makes it sound like there was saliva where it shouldn't be. But the fact is that the last episode was very parallel to what was happening in real life, which was the ending of the series and the ending of the talk show. And I think a lot of that sentiment was truly felt. And then as the characters would do on the Larry Sanders Show, desperately an attempt was made to deny that emotion and cover it and be okay. And there's a great scene in the final episode where Artie says, "Come on, everybody, it's all okay. Larry doesn't want to see any emotion. Let's get through this show. It's going to be fantastic." And then he makes the long walk on his own that goes on silently for a minute and a half until he's in the wardrobe room, and then he cries by himself.
Do you think Larry Sanders, where is Larry now? Now that his talk show has ended and he's been off the air for a few years, he must be doing something. Well, he couldn't be like Johnny, just go to the mountaintop and wait.
No, I think we were toying with an idea in the last episode that Larry would end up buying a house next to Johnny and he'd be sitting on the beach just waving at him, but we didn't go that way. No, Larry's probably sitting around considering going back into television, I suppose.
Well, it's something, not this, of course. This is not something you can always be proud of, but the show is something you can always be proud of, and that could never be taken away from
That's
you.
Sweet,
it must
yeah.
be a wonderful, wonderful feeling.
There's a great sense of accomplishment in this show. I'm proud of the show. I think it's absolutely held a consistency for the over the years, and I'm really proud of the show, and I think it's really funny. I had to watch some of the episodes to prepare to comment on them in the DVD, and I have to say I found myself laughing, which was embarrassing because I was laughing at myself and the others, and but I think the show's funny. I'm proud of it. Well, Tom, I'm going to go get something to eat, and let me show you where the pool is.
Okay.